Hello and welcome to Weekly Geek Speak on this fine day. I'm Andrew.
I'm Scott.
And I'm Steve.
And you can find us on Twitter at Weekly Geek Speak. Check us out there. We're on Facebook, Weekly Geek Speak. Just search in that search bar and give it a like with a thumb. If you enjoy us, please subscribe and review us on iTunes. We're also on Spreaker, Stitcher and Podcastland, and also on YouTube.
I had my first dream about Weekly Geek Speak the other day.
Well, what happened?
I was leaving work and then Steve was like waiting for me. And then we were like estranged for some reason. I think we'd had some sort of fallout. And then Steve was like, hey, it's Andrew. I can't remember dream dialogue. I don't. You're not aware of dialogue, but you know someone saying. You were like, oh, it's Andrew. And then you drove me to the middle of nowhere and they were like a small rundown theatre. And then I went in and then Andrew's on stage. And then he asked us both up. And then everyone was like, it's really expert!
Were they all small Muppet creatures from Labyrinth?
Yeah, they were. But they liked us.
Cool.
Yeah, we filled out a hall. Right, so there, you tricked me into a reunion.
Getting the band back together.
Well, if you would like to meet Weekly Geek Speak, we
other stuff happened.
Yeah.
Ooh. But that's the only bit relevant.
If you would like to meet us, we will be at the Green Room on the 3rd of March, which is Tuesday coming. And you can come along and watch Masters of the Universe with us. It's a free screening, free popcorn, free laughs.
You have the power!
And coming up in today's show, we're having a Mean Geek Off. And we will also be... looking back on a film which is now, how old? 30 years old?
30 years.
30 years old. More on that soon. But we like to start our show every other week with an open forum where we talk about things. Things that we wouldn't normally talk about, something that wouldn't normally arise in the show, and just something that crossed our mind in the past few weeks. But before we do, every few of these, we do have a what have you been watching. So I thought I'd kick off with a what have you been watching. It's been a few months since we talked about that. Is there anything good on TV you've been viewing with your eyes?
I know this is incredibly predictable, but after what I watched this morning, it has to be said, The Flash is fucking the best show ever devised. Televisions were invented so one day I could watch The Flash and what happened at the end of that episode.
Good. Is this like a mid-season thing or
no, just a pure The Flash is fucking awesome all the time.
There you are.
And Arrow and Gotham, and I watch too much. I don't know where I fit it in. Seriously, no. Were you watching all the Dragon Ball Z, keeping up with WWE television, all the football?
How do you do it?
I don't know. I don't sleep.
I've been, again, not really very different for me. It seems to be the same few programmes I'm watching. I've caught up with Walking Dead now, and Series 5 is just as good as Series 4 was. It's really just found its groove now, and it is going at a really exciting episode. Each episode is just a roller coaster ride. You don't know where you're going to end up, which is great to see, because after the first two series, it felt very, well, these are a little bit ploddy, but now it seems to be on just firing on all cylinders. Makes you wonder how long it can go for. It's still greatly referencing the comics as it goes, but in a kind of alternate universe, and I really like it for that. Yeah. So it's really cool. And also, I have to say, for the first time...
In forever,
while watching Breaking Bad, I've actually reached an episode where I see what the hype is about at the end of Series 4. I've jumped on again. This is like my fourth attempt, not even kidding. I keep going, right, I will finish. And I've decided what my opinion now is on Breaking Bad. And it's like, you know when someone tells you that a novel is great, a classic novel, and you read it and you can see it's good, it's great, but you just find it hard work. And you're like, God, okay, I need to put this down and come back to it in a few weeks. That's how I find Breaking Bad. And there are people that are like, I watched it over and over again, and it's great. I don't think I could watch it again, you know. And I've struggled watching it once because it that does get bloody at times, I feel.
Mm.
But yeah, at the end of this series four, it's very good. I'm sure none of our listeners need telling that if they've watched it already. And series five has started pretty good as well, so that's been quite good. And thirdly, again, not new, I'm working my way through Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex Series 2, and again, it's weaving a really interesting storyline about us, who we are, what makes us who we are, and memories and things and stuff, and then also this political stuff about refugees and this, that, and the other. It's really exciting, great anime.
Cool.
Steve, what have you been watching?
Well, I'm really pleased to hear that you've gone back on board with Breaking Bad. That's happy. I want you to finish it. You've made it this far. So that's,
oh,
that's
I will
good.
Now. I will. I think there's no way.
Five picks up. Yeah. Five kicks it up a gear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's never a dull moment, so that's good.
Well, you told me that about all of it, and I found lots of dull moments.
Yeah, but I don't know. I enjoyed it more the second time because you pick up on more. You're more aware, yeah. But it's good to hear. I'll be intrigued to hear your thoughts on Series 5. But based on that, I've been watching the spin-off, Better Call Saul, which is the Breaking Bad prequel.
Mm.
Two episodes in, I've missed this week. So unfortunately, they're not doing it so you can binge-watch it. They're doing one episode a week. Which I guess is kind of nice in the day and age where you can binge-watch everything, having to wait. So pros and cons, but it's been so good, I do want another episode there now. Mm. Not, it could have gone either way. It could have been a silly comedy, nothing like Breaking Bad, but no, you can tell it's been done by the writers and the people who did Breaking Bad. It's got that dark edge. It's funny where it needs to be, but I'm intrigued to see where they go with it. But very, very good two episodes in. Really strong opening episode, and the second one kept that pace, because sometimes you get a great pilot and then the second one goes, we've hooked you in, this one's not as good. But no, this didn't stop, so I'm hoping it keeps up.
Do you know much about it in terms of are they going to have it for a certain amount of series or?
Don't know. No. But already there's little things. I mean, 5-10 minutes in, it's like, oh, okay, so there's references and Easter eggs already, so really enjoying that. Other than that, no, I went back and bought Call of Duty Ghosts for a fiver, because it's one that I missed because I fell out of love after Black Ops 2, and it's really, really good. They've picked up again, and it feels like the old Call of Duties when they first rebooted it. Really enjoying the story.
They have story.
Yeah, it's all right, but it's one of those things. It's a franchise now, and you get a game, you know you're going to get a game each year, and the first one was so strong with such a good story and an ending you didn't see coming, and they've got to keep that hype going year in, year out, whereas so they kind of lost their way a little bit, and this feels quite good, and the online's really good fun, so that's what I've been doing rather than watching TV. Filling my spare
Mask
time
as well. Ooh. The talking game,
is it good?
When I first played it as a sequel to Ocarina of Time, when I was a kid and very impatient, I found it very frustrating. And I'm pretty sure I did return to it and complete it, but I can't remember. But I remember returning to it a few years ago and absolutely loving it. And just to have it all remastered and hoisted up, and a few of the kinks are just improved. And it's a brilliant game. I love you, George.
And does it work on a 3DS?
Oh, definitely.
It works really well.
Yeah. It's I'd go as far as to say it's a must if you have a 3D.
Cool.
That's how much I like it.
Cool. Nice. Well, let's start the open forum by throwing the ball across to Scott.
50 Shades of Grey has been infecting cinemas up and down the country. I say infecting. and that's obviously is glamorising BDSM. If you had to do a mainstream erotic film, what sort of weird fetish would you try and glamorise?
Glamorise.
Or idealise.
A film I've bought and I'm desperate to watch out of morbid curiosity is a film called Necromantic. It doesn't take much to guess what that film's about. Yeah. I don't think it glorifies it at all. In fact, I think the premise is there's a guy and his girlfriend, and they've got twisted interests in the bedroom, and he gets a job in a morgue, and then one day smuggles a body back with him, and his girlfriend likes this body a bit too much and falls in love with it. So there's an interesting one for you 50 Shades of Grey fans out there. Why don't you go to the next step and have sex with a dead body?
At work, a woman asked me if I'd watched it, and I went, "Oh no, I don't really think it's my sort of film." And she went, "Oh, you should. It'll teach you how to be a man." So I politely said to her along the lines of, "Oh, it's okay, I'm my own man." And she went, "Yeah, but one women like..."
Oh, wow.
Oh, like a really old, weird woman. I don't think she meant it as the way it came out. But I just went, "You don't know how much that stings."
Wow.
Like, fuck. Because I'm not going to watch some trashy bit of mainstream porn.
It's funny, I expected it, but you get a lot of people grumbling about it. It glamorises domestic abuse. But people weren't that bothered when Secretary came out, and that was like kind of sexual abuse in the workplace, and then she liked it.
It's that sort of sexual complicitness, isn't it, that I imagine.
But to the question, Steve, what would you like to glamorise sexually?
I don't know. It's a strange one. I was just thinking, because we were watching Pulp Fiction the other day and talking about how Quentin Tarantino manages to get feet in all of his films. Mm. He glamorises his...
More so than any in Pulp Fiction, really.
But he sort of just... subtly does it. Well, it's not even subtle, is it? But
no, big feet.
It's just feet. It's like, we'll cut to some feet.
I'd love to watch Quentin Tarantino's Hateful Feet. That's just his new film. 8 random feet.
Yeah.
Smushing against each other.
When we never look from the ankle up. Mm. It's like doing Cow and Chicken or Tom and Jerry.
Yeah,
when
you only see feet.
A Tarantino movie just with bare feet.
He needs to do
That's
it.
A good shout.
Yeah.
He'd love that as well. He's basically been training for that his entire... Yeah. A sort of... with Western themes and Samuel Jackson and feet.
He's got all the different ideas. I wonder if there's a supercut out there of all the shots of feet in films that he's done.
I guarantee 1,000,000% without looking that it's true. And it's 17 minutes, 32 seconds.
Okay.
No, I don't know. I
remember seeing a documentary about people who fall in love with objects. So they believe that...
I love lamp.
Basically. Okay. But this woman was in love with a fence and often pleasured herself. And another person...
offensive.
And another person was in love with the Eiffel Tower and then got told off when they actually went to see it for rubbing themselves on it.
Yeah.
And then there was another... This makes me laugh every time I think of it. A guy who was in love with a... He loved fairground rides and the way they looked and things. So he went to an abandoned fairground and then was rubbing his face on a big wheel, getting oil all over it. Like all over his face, like dirty engine oil.
People are weird.
That's make a sexy movie sexy about movie somebody. About
objects.
And what object could it be? An old tractor.
Ooh. Okay.
Combine harvester.
It'd be called Attraction.
Attraction.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's something even more surreal than a vehicle. Just like an old dishwasher. Not even turned on, just an old dishwasher. Well, they're turned on. All right, Steve, what do you want to see glamorised?
I don't know.
Yeah, you do.
I can't think of anything. For some reason, I've got the... strange image of I'm scanning the Guinness Book of Records in my head for strange things. And
have the Guinness Book of Records in your head?
Yeah, hang on. Page 84. Oh, God. A picture of a strange
Darren
man
Brown.
It's weird. Anyway, no.
Doing what?
But I'm picturing the people that can magnetise things to that, like spoons things. You know, where you see people with spoons stuck all over them. That would be something very odd. You could make a film out of it starts off with teaspoons, then all look what I can do. And then it's spoons get boring, teaspoons are what else could we do? And they move on to all the different cutlery, they move on to big, I don't know.
Don't you think Steve's mind's a wonderful place?
So I guess it moves to my open forum. It's around that time of year when we get all of these and I hate them, award shows. And the one that made me want to bring this up was the Grammys. And I find the music shows worse.
That's for the best grandparents.
Yes, yeah. The Grundles and the Grannies. the Grundles, the Grannies and the Grammys. But I just... Like, the film ones, I think they're okay. It's still a bit of a backslap, a big hand job to each other.
Oh, yeah, it's a big farce.
So. But the music ones seem even more like they're throwing food to the masses, laughing down upon them and then patting themselves on the back and then singing some awful rendition of something on stage and then someone has to come out with a wig on when they're bum out and it's controversial apparently, and then Madonna slops onto stage with her skin. They stretch her out like that thing off Doctor Who and everyone goes, ugh. Oh God. And I find them more and more insufferable. I don't know if that's it was on. I watched the BAFTAs. I like that. I like Stephen Fry. I think British people don't take themselves as seriously. Also, they say the British events don't take themselves as seriously. So, even though it is a big deal and things, there's a bit of like tongue in cheekness to some of the comedy and stuff. And but the Grammys was so serious. This is serious business. And I just don't like it. I don't like the attitude.
No, I completely agree. Art's a subjective thing. Why are you trying to decree what's the best? In what eyes? You're never going to come to a proper consensus. And you're not even polling everyone, so your stats are flawed. So I hate the Oscars, because the average sort of demographic for an Academy voter is like mid-50s to late-60s white elderly person in Hollywood who likes a particular type of film. Anyone with playing a diseased, anyone playing anything with a disease, anything in World War II, or anyone who existed, preferably all three. And if you incorporate any sort of genre that's looked down upon, you are instantly disqualified, no matter how good and well received you are. And we all have to accept it's the best film. Why? Because of the Oscars.
Then the awful thing is you get the polar opposite, like idiot awards. Like,
you get the Razzies.
Not even the negative, the bad ones. Right. I mean, like, it's the MTV Movie Awards! The Twilight's won! Twilight's won! Won again! It hasn't been out for 3 years. Twilight's won!
It's got a category for the best kiss.
I know.
Really?
Do you know what I mean? That's how seriously that's taken. Best fight, I think, is one.
But why can't we meet somewhere in the middle? Why does it have to be moronic or extremely up its own bum?
Can't we just look
Why can't
films?
We meet just in the middle somewhere?
How long ago did we have our awards?
Ours is perfect, though. Ours is about geeky films, and we even address that, the genre films that don't get that love, and that's why we do it. I mean, it's not a big deal at all.
It's basically a way of structuring a sort of end of year show. But yeah, awards that claim any sort of prestige, I would say, it's so wildly subjective how you can say 8 films deserve to be nominated for the best. Based on what? It's not box office, is it? It's based on the ones that are vying for it, and then some people consenting to it. And it's like, it's just bullshit. Are you telling me Boyhood might win or Birdman? Are you telling me that's the best film of the year? Because when I talk to people from this year, the best film they've watched is Guardians of the Galaxy.
And that would never sniff.
Yeah, nope. And I'm not being funny, because I know we're talking different kinds of films.
Exactly.
And one's more sort of quote-unquote artistically worthy. But to 2014, I know what the film of the year was, just based on everything you can imagine surrounding a film.
And it was an achievement to make a property like that work so well.
Yeah, definitely.
It really was an achievement. But anyway, it was just a grumble, basically. I wanted to get it off my chest.
And I'm not even saying Guardians should have been nominated for Oscar. I'm just pointing out that no one would have even vaguely considered it. Why? And then when you start answering that, you realise what the Oscars are, really.
Steve, what's your open forum?
Mine is, I said I've not been watching much TV, but I watched a bit of Fort Boyard, the game show.
With Dirty Den.
With Dirty Den and Melinda Messenger and running about talents, in a fort in the middle of the sea.
I love Bargain Bin Crystal Maze.
Playing game shows in... Yeah.
I used to
oddly,
watch that more.
That came first.
Did it?
Yeah, and it's the same company that did Crystal Maze, which moves me on. Crystal Maze, I was watching it the other day, and you've got Richard O'Brien. He's amazing. He's running around. He's the character that leads them up through all these zones and all the games. The witty commentary with the...
Acting like Riff Raff.
Yeah, the witty commentary with the mouth organ and Mumsy and all these little...
It's really annoying.
...nods. But then Ed Tudorpole came along and tried to replicate that. He didn't... He wasn't his own... He tried too hard to follow in those footsteps, and it doesn't quite work as well. So, I was thinking, let's bring it to now. We've been asked to remake it.
Crystal Maze.
We're going to remake the Crystal Maze. We could do whatever we want in the zones. It could be a movie zone. It could be a Marvel one. It could be... Who would present it? What sort of games and what zones would we have? And I just thought we could talk about
that. I will happily go on this journey, but we have a lot of overseas listeners.
Yeah.
Could you explain the Crystal Maze? Because I'm pretty sure it's a predominantly sort of our age British person gets this reference.
Fair enough.
So can you just explain it to
them? So the Crystal Maze, Richard O'Brien, you have, I believe, 8 contestants. Tweet if I'm wrong. 8 contestants, all random people. They introduce them at the start. They get introduced to a zone. They have
hello,
a skill.
I'm Bob from Norwich.
Hi, Bob from Norwich. I'm Diana from Fulham.
So we're going to play a game today. We're going to play a mystery, a skill, or a... What's the other... Oh, God.
Intelligence.
A game. Intelligence. We're going to, and they choose a game. And right, you're the captain, Bob. Who are you going
to
pick?
I want Janine to do this really hard one, which includes a lot of upper body strength, and she hasn't got any, so she's going to go in there.
Great choice. Right, come on, Janine. And he takes Janine, and he drags Janine. They go in a room, right? You've got a timer, and you've got, ooh, this one's 2.5 minutes, so off you go. And then there's these little windows, so they can
Janine, you need to... You're doing it wrong, Janine. Yep. Janine, you're doing it wrong.
And Janine...
Yeah, that's wrong. Janine, your time's running
this
out.
Is it. So, yeah, and that's it. Janine stood there. Janine, nose in her head, probably what she's got to do. She's seen these objects. She's got to make a jigsaw puzzle. Brilliant. Okay.
Janine, and they're all there leaning in the window.
Janine is the one on the left.
But no, that's too helpful.
Oh yeah.
It was never Janine that. Janine, you need to take that one because that one. No, not that one.
Not that one. No. It's behind the door. The one over there.
It was always like, oh, this task. You have to listen for the correct noise, and they'll be like, we don't know what it is yet, but stay alert.
We can't hear it.
And then they're like, I can't hear it because of you guys. That one was a pigeon. Just keep your ears open.
And then there's the ones where they can't join it. They can't. There's clearly offer no advice where they have to walk over like a water, and there's a balance beam. There's no advice you can offer. Don't fall in. Don't fall in. Look for the crystal. The crystal's at the other side of the room, and they're walking on a balance beam. Don't fall in. Go a bit slower.
And then the annoying presenter man goes. And it's just like a chaos of noise going off as this poor. Poor Janine's trying to walk across some monkey bars.
It's a brilliant British
show. It is. And then they get to the end, and depending on how many crystals, they get 5 seconds of time per crystal, and they go into a giant crystal with
sticky.
A fan underneath it that blows around gold and silver tickets. They count the tickets after however much time they've got, and if they get over 100, they win a prize. So that's your concept. So we were, and they have different zones, like space, Aztec, under the water... Medieval.
Elaborate theme park with isolated rooms full of inane tasks.
There we go.
Can we do, because I enjoyed that so much, can we do Fort Boyard as well?
It's exactly the same on an island with Dirty Dead from EastEnders and Melinda Messenger.
And they need keys instead of things. Yeah. Crystals, and they cut to shots of lions.
And
there
were
cage.
Tigers
There's
in the
tigers.
Cage, so they could have eaten you, but never did for some reason.
They never did. The tigers never got out.
Weren't they midgets as well?
There was midgets. There was midgets, and Melinda Messenger. If you don't know Melinda Messenger, she's very well endowed, and they made her run around a lot. I remember.
I'm only saying midgets in this context because I'm pretty sure they will have been referred to as midgets within that show.
Yes, there's Tom Baker midgets. In a lighthouse as well. Which is brilliant. Great. So yeah, I just thought, what zones could we have? Who'd present it? How could we make it our like weekly Geek Speak based on all the podcasts we've done? Anything that stood
we
out.
We need a
zone
for everything that's important to us. So I think like a DC zone and a Marvel zone, Star Wars zone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Green Hill zone.
Nice.
Sonic. Boyzone.
I'm imagining, like, we've gone into the Star Wars zone, and what we need to do is we need someone to use their intelligence and dexterity to work their way around the cantina bar. So but Stephen, and what Steve has to do as he's walking through is he's got to get through without banging into anyone or bumping into any aliens that might go, "I don't like you."
In fact, can we play this out? I'll be the background noise. Steve, you wonder.
All right, Steve. What are they getting? A weekly speak crest.
Okay, what am I doing?
Right,
What have I got to do?
You've got to walk across it.
What?
You've got to walk across the bar.
Across what? Over there?
Stop, there's an alien.
Where
are we
going? Where's what? Him?
There's an alien.
That's Scott.
Go on, don't speak to the alien.
You all right, Mr. Alien?
Hello.
What?
Don't speak to him. You're doing it wrong.
You've
run out of time.
Can you help me?
You've locked in.
You're being locked in. You're out of the game.
And that might sound like absolute chaos to you, but that's pretty much Crystal Maze.
I like the idea of collecting Death Stars just in that zone instead of
Crystal Spheres. That would be good. And there were Pokemon Zone. You could collect the Pokeballs. You could collect Pokeballs.
And in like Marvel, you get gems, Infinity Gems.
Yeah.
Mm.
There we go. There's three zones. What were the fourth? So Star Wars, Marvel, Pokemon. Well, Green Hill Zone.
Chaos Emerald.
Chaos Emeralds. Nice.
Easy.
Who'd present it? If we could get any, we could, you know, we've got Hollywood on the phone. They're like, you need a presenter, guys. We've heard.
Why would we go to Hollywood?
Paul Hollywood. I mean, there's Mary Berry.
Hey.
Barry,
I say Andy Peters from the 90s.
Oh, you'd get Andy Peters back. Kicking. Oh, nice.
I can't think of a better shout than that.
That's Andy amazing. Peters.
Easy.
Would he have a sidekick?
Richard Blackwood.
Oh. Nice.
I like this.
Yeah.
It's done.
I like it.
We can definitely get the presenters.
So we've got the four zones, and we've got. Like, we're winning.
We don't even have to ask them. They'll probably ring us now.
So at the end, are we going to keep the format where you go inside the dome and blow the things, or are we going to go Fort Boyard?
I'm not blowing Andy Peters. Again.
We blow Andy Peters in a cupboard. No, that's an aside.
You've won. Come in here.
Well done. But
you're doing it wrong.
Julia, what are you doing? But yeah, so what we're going to do as an end game, we've won four Death Stars, we've won some Emeralds, we've won some Chaos Emeralds, we've got two Pokeballs. That's the equivalent of a minute. What are we going to do in that minute?
Everyone's a question, and it's a coffee table movie quiz question, and you get a certain amount and get your money.
Nice.
I think you make love to a disused dishwasher.
Definitely. Nothing screams us more than...
I think you have to get the contestants in a giant ring. Each one gets a toaster based on Scott's idea that he always brings up about Transformers. Everyone gets a toaster.
I think you bring it.
It's because I like it and I want Scott to actually make it. Because I remember back in the... way back when, Scott's like, one day, two toasters banging together, I'll be better than Michael Bay's Transformers. Well, he's done four films and you haven't done toasters. So I think as an end game...
I was going to recreate Transformers 2 in a low-budget style. Yeah. And all I need is a sandpit, two toasters and some paint. Yeah. And so, I still think I will.
I think
that'd go viral.
So this could be our end game, the sandpit with the toasters, and you have to bang it together and they'll film it and it's like, right, and they decide whether it's up there...
So at the end of every week, they make a Transformers.
It's an annoying Transformers parody as you watch them monotonously
smashing kitchen implements together.
Well,
I don't know.
Well, it's an idea.
It is.
It's an idea.
It's one of my ideas. So let's put that over there in a corner.
It's something.
I don't see how this show can fail. Which channel do we pitch to?
Yeah. Welcome to Top 5. Steve is famous for his Top 5s, starting with the beard list of 27. Today he's got his list prepared, but he didn't do 5.
I've done 5. There's definitely
five. You didn't put the numbers.
There's definitely 5. I just haven't numbered them.
So Steve, reveal to us, what is your Top 5 this week?
Well, for the Top 5, I saw the end of Titanic the other day, and it just made me think, how good an actor Leonardo DiCaprio has become and how established he's become and all the films that he's done. So I listed all the films that I'd seen with Leonardo DiCaprio and narrowed it down to 5 of the really good ones that I had seen and thought we could lead on to just discussing Leonardo DiCaprio and his stuff, rather than being like a top five per se, here's my favourite, I thought we could sort of just
here
discuss.
Here are five great.
Here's five good Leonardo DiCaprio films I've seen. You can probably offer more because you've seen more. Mm-hmm. And then we could talk about Leonardo DiCaprio for a bit because, yeah.
I had a dream the other day where he died.
What?
Like, it wasn't a big part of the dream. It was more people telling me he died was somehow part of the dream. Isn't that weird?
It's very odd.
And it was like only literally like a few days ago. Did I enter your mind through some sort of inception?
This is why I thought of this. Wait a second.
I think I might be accepting people in my dreams.
Yeah. But he's. I mean, What's Eating Gilbert Grape was one of the first films I ever saw him in. It's such a fantastic role. He's such a powerful role that he plays really, really well.
What was eating him?
We'd never found out.
Was it just the same bacteria that's killing us all?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it wasn't wolves. I thought it might be wolves. No. But, but Gilbert Grape. Great film.
I've not seen it. It's a really astounding performance from him, and you can see how good he was going to be. A lot of actors and actresses play a disabled character, but he plays it so well. He really, it sounds weird, but comes across as disabled. A lot of times you see people and it's like they're doing a performance, but he really doesn't. He's just so...
It's more than
an
affectation.
He is this character, yeah. He really feels like this little sweet kid that can't do anything for himself. He's still a little child stuck in a teenager's body, and he plays it so well. And it's a really interesting dynamic between him and Johnny Depp, his older brother.
Yeah.
Johnny Depp's character doesn't resent him, but he's going that way. But he loves him, so you really get the troubled feelings that you might get if you're caught in that awful situation where you obviously love your sibling to bits, but they're such not a burden, but he's got to be there for his family. It's a very interesting film.
It's a very strong film.
And a great performance from Leo, who is a completely lovable character in this as well. You really feel for him, and you want to know him in a weird way. You know what I mean? Because he's so sweet.
Yeah, he's good. I mean, I've worked with young people with special needs, and yeah, I haven't revisited it since doing that. It is just a fantastic, powerful film, and quite thought provoking as well. Next one I saw Romeo and Juliet, which sort of threw him out into the thing, him and Claire Danes in Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet. Now, I love that film because I'm not a huge... The Shakespeare that I touched at school didn't particularly interest me. And this just made me... I liked Baz Luhrmann's take on it. I liked the way it was directed. I liked the script, the soundtrack. And it just... It made Shakespeare accessible to me, and that sounds really stupid, but
yeah.
I really liked it. And I thought Leonardo DiCaprio was good in it.
Yeah.
And it was... It launched him onto posters and things, and Claire Danes was everywhere. But I think rightly so.
Well, he made it very vibrant and modern, and it helped put that in. It's very colourful and manic. I never quite got the... I don't know what people find Shakespeare quite inaccessible. I never quite understood that. Because if you just sit down and look at the language, you can always decipher what it means. It's just very creative... way of phrasing, and very poetic in his prose and stuff. And then the broader stories are always really like interesting. I always found it interesting at school. I always had to keep that quiet because I felt weird. But I'm at an age now I can go fuck you all. Yeah. Shakespeare's all right.
I think it was my experience. The English teacher, we did Midsummer Night's Dream, and it wasn't very well pitched. And everyone else, they did The Tempest. Someone else did Macbeth, and our group got Midsummer Night's Dream. And they were all really excited about it, we got Midsummer Night's Dream, and it just felt very. And the teacher didn't.
We did 12.
I don't know. Night. It just didn't come across. So that sort of put me off Shakespeare. But like you say, now you can reflect on it and go,
that's
yeah, actually,
your teacher's fault.
Yeah,
frankly,
exactly.
I was very more your Hamlets and Macbeths and things. These big
big tragedies and things, and obviously Romeo and Juliet is that the romance always, romance, but you can appreciate it more, as you say, when you stop being a stupid teenager, and this is a brilliant, and as you say, it makes it accessible, Romeo and Juliet, but Baz Luhrmann's just style really lends itself to it, the pacing and things, and I don't know if it's one of Leo's best performances, but it's certainly a good, great film.
Part of it is introduction.
That Titanic, the beach, where he's kind of
The
coming of Leo, wasn't it?
Yeah,
the rising of Leo.
Yeah.
Is the beach on your list?
No, I've skipped past Titanic and the beach.
I always liked the beach.
I never really, I don't know, I haven't read the book. It missed something for me. I don't know.
It's not one of Daniel Boyle's best, or Leo's best, but I just thought it quite solid and interesting.
Yeah.
It was the earliest film I can remember kind of liking Leonardo DiCaprio. Because around this time, I was a bit... It was everywhere.
Yeah, because it's Titanic Romeo and Jr. Romeo. And yeah.
You were a bit like that guy. And it was like, But now he's a well-established sort of... actor. Beach.
No beach.
I want to hear all your honourable mentions when you're done.
So I moved it on to Catch Me If You Can. Was the
Catch
next film
me
I saw.
If you
and
can, I'm feeling fine.
And yeah, that's the next one I saw him in. And this, I think, this is the one that blew me away. It showed that after Romeo and Juliet, Titanic, and the beach, and sort of like you say, being everywhere and getting into that, he proved he could do something. This really sold Leo to me, in that. There's such a strong character, him up against Tom Hanks, and he holds his own, and he did a really grand job of playing this character that escaping Tom Hanks and playing all these different roles within that film.
It's very good. It's a good it's a Spielberg one people never mention, and I really like it, and he's really charming in it. He's a great con man, and he's got a great dynamic with Fanks, who he's trying to outrun.
Yeah.
You forgot to call him Fanks.
Oh, I did.
But I'll forgive you.
Sorry.
And it's just little flourishes, like all his aliases are like Marvel super heroes. Like he's always Reed Richards or Kurt Connors. Or, I always like that. I always thought it was a really good film. It's really enjoyable. It's a nice mention. Yeah. It might probably be in my five.
Not sure quite if it would be in my five, I think, but... I'm interested to see what you've omitted, because I think he's... But the thing is, saying it now, Leo has worked with... He's been very savvy in who he's worked with.
Yeah.
He's got all the big names. There's very few duds in there. And people might shout Titanic, but no, that was his...
But he's worked with Cameron, one of the biggest.
Yeah.
So he's still got that... Lerman, Cameron, Clint Eastwood, Spielberg, Nolan... Martin Scorsese,
Boyle.
Ad Infamous. Boyle. It's a bit like, who hasn't he? Tarantino, of course.
Yeah.
Who has he got left?
Yeah. Where has he got to go?
Fincher, maybe. Or the Coens. I've heard that.
Coens. Oh, he'd be good in a Coen Brothers film.
Anyway, where was
anyway, we're going next.
We're fantasy casting now.
Yeah, no. We're going next. I've skipped. Aviator was another one. Playing another true story where he played the
pilot. Is that one you've picked?
Yeah.
Aviation.
No, I enjoyed it. Again, to hold his own after being sort of thrown into the limelight with those three.
It's not the Scorsese one I would have picked personally.
Would you pick Shutter Island?
This is what I thought. I haven't seen Shutter Island. This list here is literally all the ones I've seen. I thought I'd seen more, but it's like, well, why I thought it'd be nice to...
I prefer The Departed and Shutter Island, but it's a very good film. It's a very strong performance, as Howard Hughes. And you've seen a Scorsese film. I'm just proud of you.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
I
haven't seen
any.
That's why it's not been
picked.
I
haven't seen any. I missed that Inception because, I don't know, he stood out in that. He was good in that. But I don't think... I don't know. As a film overall, it works. But I didn't pick that. And then I just went to Django because I think his performance in that is... It's just such a strong... It just shows how far that he's come to have such a powerful... Small, but... standout powerful role from, you know, everything he's done and everything he's been in.
Brilliant in it, and it's great to work with Tarantino because he's a very loquacious writer, so he just puts the best scenery chewing dialogue in a great actor's mouth. So he obviously comes out great at that because he's a great actor.
Probably would make my top five. You've missed out some right ones.
Well, I say I've only the only other one I've seen that I crossed out was Basketball Diaries because I don't remember it. That's literally all I've seen. I thought I'd seen more DiCaprios than that, but I obviously didn't want to put in ones I hadn't seen. So,
just to throw up, Steve's was in no particular order. What's Eating Gilbert Grape, Romeo and Juliet, yep. Catch Me If You Can, Aviator, and Django. Yep. I think. Yeah, but this really shows how strong he is. But let's run through some of the other ones now. I mean, Shutter Island is a really... It's Hitchcock. Scorsese does Hitchcock in a way, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very Hitchcocky.
Really a mind-bending film, a real journey you go on with him, and a real realisation. And this film is reliant on Leo. It's Leo's performance that carries this film through, isn't it? You need to bond with this character, and you need to go through it with him, and that's what makes that film just so incredible for me.
And Inception's just an incredibly smart, cool blockbuster heist film with new sci-fi elements and ideas not quite touched on before, and he's the linchpin of that. I know it's a bit of an ensemble cast, but he's the guy who puts his heist together. He's the protagonist whose journey we care about. We're the reason we want them to pull off this job. And he's the one with the issues that might affect the job. Inception is got to be up there. And you've missed out most of his work with Scorsese, though.
So it's the ones I haven't seen. Like, this is why I was intrigued to see you guys' thoughts.
I think he deserved The Wolf of Wall Street. He really deserved an Oscar for that. I think,
right,
seeing both that, I think McConaughey got it in the end, didn't he? For Dallas Buyers Club.
I don't remember.
Not sure.
But he deserves recognition for Wolf of Wall Street because that feels almost like it's the third one after, like, Goodfellas, Casino, and Wolf of Wall Street go in that box set for me, right, of kind of tales of a person, you know, you're following a journey, a life story of someone. It's such a great film. Have you seen it yet, Wolf of Wall Street?
Not yet.
You'll love it because it's so good.
It's one of my favourite directors with a great cast in an area I'm interested about. I could not tell you because it's been living on my laptop for about a year. I can't even tell you why. Hopefully by next time. But The Departed and Gangs of New York.
Oh, yes.
Again, not seen that. Right.
This
is the top five Leo films I should see.
Oh, you've missed some peaches. And I feel like I'm forgetting so much.
I was just amazed at how many I hadn't seen. I thought, I've seen enough of these to get it.
Why didn't Titanic work?
I think it got me at the wrong time. I think basically a lot of people, it came out of nowhere and everyone was just raving about it. The Celine Dion song was on the radio all the time, and I don't know, I didn't buy into it. So when myself and James made it, and two other people from college made a pact to never watch it.
Unfortunately,
I got forced into breaking it years later at uni, and it was awful.
I don't
think I ever bought into it, but having seen it,
I think
since,
there was a lot of knee-jerk reaction against Titanic for some reason, that it was a big blockbuster romance and people didn't like that for some reason. It's not a great film, but I think it doesn't deserve the chastisation it gets.
No.
Well, but when you become the most highest-grossing, most popular film of all time, you're always going to get that because it doesn't deserve that. So... It's James Cameron makes those sort of films, and that's why he gets it. I don't think it's bad, but I definitely don't think it deserves half of what it got, and I think that's why it got the backlash.
Yeah,
it's just
I'll agree.
Human nature, isn't it? I think it's a landmark part of filmmaking. Just what they did is incredibly impressive, and it's solid enough. I just thought it's fine. It's just fine. It's not my favourite any sort of film.
I'll go with that. I'll go along with that, definitely.
And then,
I haven't seen it since.
Great Gatsby as well, he's in. I think the film is okay. It's a little bit forgettable, but his performance is very strong in that one as well.
Cool.
And again, I'm pretty sure there's several. But you can only do your own top five of your experiences.
So there we are.
And it's better than your beard list.
Because there was five.
There were actually five, yeah.
Good stuff. Well, do you agree? Do you disagree? Do you think there should be something in there that Steve's missed? Is there anything we haven't talked about that thinks deserves talking about? Let us know.
Yeah.
That was your top five?
Any of these sections, top fives, Mean Geeks, Clash of the Titans,
you want to influence what we do next, you know what to do. Sit there and do nothing. No, no, tweet us. Or send us an email.
Hello, it's me, Lucy. How you doing? I'm just here giving you an update on Weekly Geek Speak stuff. There's a few days left for you to enter the I Want Stan competition. What is this competition? Why have you not heard of it? Well, you should have heard of it, because it's your chance to win your own custom minifigures version of Stan Lee in Lego form. He's very cute, and I know you want him. So, if you would really like to have your own mini Stan Lee, answer this question correctly. What new Disney animated film is based on a Marvel property? If you know the right answer, then tweet us with the hashtag IWantStan to @WeeklyGeekSpeak, or you can email us on weeklygeekspeak@gmail.com. We've got a few more days left, but the competition is running till the end of the month, and then we will be picking out a winner very shortly. So get on it. Also this week we've got a returning blogger, and that is Matt Aspin, who has written a brilliant blog on the top arcade games of yesteryear. Do you remember when we used to go to an arcade and we used to put our little 10p's in so we could play Street Fighter and stuff, and you'd come out with like claw hands and your thumbs really hurt, but you were happy? Those were the days. Can't do that no more. Anyway, so he's written a blog on that and it's really good, so you should read it. And then we have a new blogger, who is Thomas Shaw, who's also done a blog on Kingsman, the Secret Service. It's a really good blog and I suggest you read it. You can follow both of these bloggers on Twitter. You can follow Matt Aspin on the Twitter handle @TheMasp, which is spelled T-H-E, obviously, _ M-A-A-S-P. You can also follow Thomas Shaw under the handle @MobyDuck. That's MobyDuck. Keep your blogs coming in to weeklygeekspeak@gmail.com. We really appreciate them and we want more to put on the website. And keep your eyes on the website, because we have always got lots of interesting things being put on there, and you should get involved and let us know what you think. I think that's all from me, so until next time, cheerio. Bye.
It is time for us to Meme Geek, which is where we're meme geeks, and we work out the averages of the films from a certain director or actor or studio, and we each rate it out of 10, and then we work out an average, and then we bring out a top whatsoever of them. And today we're doing the fine director, who is Kevin Smith, fine podcaster, fine director. A bit of a cult status around himself. And I think we'll all agree that he's a director that we follow and respect. And he's done... He's brought his own unique brand of humour and style to his films, so which is why we chose him this week for Mean Geeks. I know we talked last week, Only Zack and Miri was bought to decommend by Scott, and we enjoyed talking about it so much that we thought we'd do the rest of his films. Why the hell not?
Mm.
So, let's not beat around the bush. Let's start with saying that, unfortunately, what is deemed to be his worst film, Cop Out, none of us have seen. So, unfortunately, it's disqualified.
So, it's got an average score of 0.
Ah.
Does leave us nicely with a top 10. So, that's cool.
Cool.
Yeah. And in 10th place, and I think this shows that we are all fans of his work, and it's only me and Scott, or is it Steve? It's Scott who's seen this one. It is Jersey Girl.
It's become a bit of a joke by Kevin Smith himself that it's like the joke film in his canon. And I never understood that, because it's at least as good as his other stuff.
Mm.
It's a love story, but it's about the child rather than like meet a significant other. The significant other is the child.
Mm.
And I always just thought he's quite sweet, and he obviously did it because he just had a kid or whatever.
Mm.
He gets unfairly tagged because of the J-Lo Ben Affleck business.
Yeah, yeah.
But I always thought it was quite watchable and sweet. It's not amazing. doesn't do anything to whatever.
But no,
I think it's solid.
Good bog standard drama, really, isn't it? Quite sweet, but a little bit.
Certainly not his worst.
No, it's just a bit average, really. I think is everything. It's not nothing. It doesn't define itself as anything different, I think. But there is a great scene with Sweeney Todd at the end that I really like as well. When they're doing the toilet.
Liv Tyler in it.
Oh, right, Liv Tyler. It's one that I need to get around to seeing because I think at the time, I mean, Kevin Smith's someone I love, but it was so universally disliked and there was so much hate for it. I thought, I don't want to go in with that mindset, but it's been so long now, and I think it is that and Cop Out the only two I've not seen. So I need to see them to finish the collection.
Which moves on to ninth place, and it's a film we talked about only last week. It's Zach and Miri Make a Porno with Six Across the Board.
Oh, well, we're all very evenly split with that.
So far we are. I think it's fine, entertaining, comedy, forgettable. I covered it last week.
Yeah.
That's how I view it, really.
I take it as Kevin Smith trying to do a comedy like others would, whereas he should make films that only he can do, because that's the nature of directing. It's absolutely fine, though.
Yeah, it's one that I've seen, but I think I've only seen it once. So that, unlike his other stuff, which I've watched countless times, I saw it once, it didn't offend me, it was funny. I've not revisited it.
And in eighth position, our first trip to the Viewers Q universe, as we see Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, with me and Steve giving it 7 and Scott giving it a 6. Again, I think it might suffer from just being a bit too goofy. It's moved away from his kind of... In other things, such as Dogma, he's talking about something. Mm. It's something, making a point in the story. With this, it's just finding those... He's goofing out on the goofy humour that he loves in there, and it's just honing that into a product. I find it quite enjoyable. I've watched it about 4 or 5 times, I think, in all. And it's, again, like Zach and Miri Make a Porno, it's a good madcap comedy.
Yeah, definitely. It's very cartoony. And it is funny. I think it is good. It is largely a selection of skits, almost, there. That's why I get a 6. But... I'm a fan of him, and I like his films, and I think it has a weird charm to it. It's the most stonery film he's done. It strikes me as a good stoner film.
I was going to say was, I think it's one of those films that I think it's like that for a reason, because when they were filming Clerks and Mallrats, he'd sort of made a promise to Jason Mewes that he wanted to make this film. At the end of Mallrats, it says, Jay, Silent Bob and Suzanne, that's a whole different story. And he wanted to make this film. He said to Jason Mewes, if you can quit drugs and I can earn enough money in Hollywood, we can make this film. And it happened. And it's amazing. It's good that he did. He kept his word and they made this silly, let's get all the famous people in and just make this wacky, like Scott said, lots of sketches. But it's nice to see those characters doing that thing, like the Blunt Man and Chronic comic. It is a bit silly, it's lots of different bits of things. I think it just works, and it's nice to know that he's passionate about film, but he's made that for that reason, and it's the film he wanted to make.
It's also a love letter to his own universe, meeting all those characters again, Brody, Banky, you know, going back to them all, they're all there. And also, it's a good, funny introduction to Will Ferrell. It's the first time I saw him, and he's quite great as the animal welfare officer.
And he's in Austin Powers 2 as well. That was one of the earliest things, I remember.
But yes, it's a good, fun film, but it's probably rightly placed overall. And in seventh place, it's another Viewer's Q, again with a 6 from Scott, a 7 from Steve, and a 7 from me. It's Dogma.
Again, it's very sort of cartoon graphic novel idea of what if sort of... Catholic dogma was real.
I thought you were going to say, what if God was one of us?
Yeah, what if God? Just a slob like one of us, and he's just a stranger on the bus.
Trying to find his way home.
And I mean, who can't relate to that? And if God had
it's
a
ironic,
face,
isn't it?
Like, I like it very much. You even got Alan Rickman involved in Kevin Smith. I always think that's amazing. And Chris Rock. I always think the poop monster lets it down. I really do. I know it's such a slight thing, but I just think, oh, dude, what are you, 5?
But that's like, Kevin Smith. That's his humour. He likes to get.
But that can go from charming to just odious. No pun intended.
Yeah. Okay.
Really easily, can't it?
It can, and it seems a little ill-placed with a lot of discussion on theology and Catholicism.
Exactly.
And it's quite deep and funny, and it just does seem a little thrown in there. Oh, I haven't done a fart or a dick joke. Anyway, here's a poo monster.
There's a lot of interesting ideas and comments on Catholicism in there, buried underneath what a madcap comedy. And then there's just the poop monster. And I just think, why? I don't know. Just annoys me. I think Matt Damon and Ben Affleck are very good in that. Mm-hmm. And Jason Lee.
I think Chris Rock's very good in there as well. Yeah. It's one of my favourite roles that he's done. The only thing I would criticise it for is it's a bit over-scripted, I think, at times. Maybe it needs to be to get the theology across.
Yeah, it's
but it just feels a little overwritten by him at times. And overwriting, talking in that style and that dialogue can work. It falls a little tiresome at times.
I would deliberate him with a 7 rating, but I don't watch it. I'd never think to watch it again in a weird way. I can't put it really too high for my look.
But visually as well, it's something different as well. Stylistically, he's going to do some of the effects they've got in it, and you can tell he's up the budget and he's made it to Hollywood. And I like the look of it as well.
Talking of changing up his styles, we're next in sixth place is Red State. I gave it a 6. Scott gave it a 7 and Steve gave it an 8. I think that's right.
Huh, cool. I really respect him for trying something different. I think it has some good performances in there. It's basically a very simple central premise. It's all about atmosphere and intent and characterisation that really, I think, makes it quite a strong Kevin Smith film that you would not think is a Kevin Smith film if you watched it. And it doesn't reinvent the wheel, and it's not a horror classic or a thriller classic. But I just thought it was strong and worthy because he tried something different, and I think in a weird way he might have stumbled in a genre he can thrive more, rather than being the sort of cult comedy guy in a sea of like successful comedies. I think he could be the funny cool B movie guy that has cool unnerving ideas occasionally. I think it's given him a new lease, if I mean, and I liked Red State.
Yeah. I think it's let down a little by its end. I liked the idea of him looking into this kind of what they call the Feltzes. Those kind of horrible people. But then at the end, and spoilers here, but I've got to address it to address my point. Is they believe they hear the rapture and they stop. But I am quite of the belief that these horrible religious people are using the religion as a front for just how mean and horrible and spirited that it, and it, they wouldn't
subconsciously care. They are, but I do think they believe.
You know what I mean. And I believe if the rapture, they did hear that noise and think the rapture was coming, they would probably still shoot everyone anyway. It's like it's here, God's here. I think they're mean spirited.
God's here,
people.
Let's all join him.
I don't think that's the that gets me up. And I don't know. Something prevents it from being a 7 that I can't quite put my finger on.
Fair enough.
But I think it's a good film, and great for him to dabble into something new and something, again, he was passionate about. It's a side of the Catholic and religion that he doesn't like, so addressed it in film, and I think that's the best way he can do it. And it was fun.
Yeah, and I think that's why I went higher, because it's him addressing the religion again after Dogma, but in a more serious way. And he tackled something different, and I think it worked really well. And I think I'd give it a higher score because he did have the balls to branch out of this universe where he felt comfortable and went, I'll try this. And I on first watching, I wasn't that keen, but I've seen it a good 3-4 times now, and I do genuinely really think it's good.
It's very important to point out it's not about religion; it's about religious sort of zealots.
And now we move into fifth place, and we are moving back to the Viewerskew universe in Mallrats, which I gave a 6, Scott gave a 7, and Steve gave a 9, averaging out 7.3.
I find it really weirdly watchable, Mallrats.
Because again, it suffers from the sort of collection of skits in a more. But in this case, it weirdly works for it, because it's got the overarching theme of this mall with all the characters crossing. Because I can weirdly believe that, because I was the guy who you didn't know what you were doing with your friends on Saturday, so you always went to like Meadow Hall, which is like the Sheffield equivalent of a mall. And I think most people in most towns do stuff like that. And it's one of the more weirdly quotable Kevin Smith films, just for the odd bits. And I always like Jason Lee in it, so I'm going largely off my memory, but I had to give it a 7.
It's not one for me. I've watched it a lot, about 4 or 5 times again, I think. It's one that gets worse every time I watch, I think.
Oh, it's not brilliant.
I used to love it as a teenager, and now growing up, I watch it again, I cringe a bit. And I find that with his first 3 films, really, that the more you watch it, the more faults you find.
I genuinely think you watch him become a passable director over the course of most of his films.
Yeah.
But he'd be the first to tell you that. That's why I kind of like him.
And so, if you stack those few askew ones up, it's probably the last one I would go to, personally. I think it suffers a little from second album syndrome. But yeah, I think Steve, but you gave it a 9.
Yeah,
it's your highest rating.
Yeah, I know, hindsight maybe an 8. But pushing a 9. It's one of those ones I owned on video. And I watched a lot. And like you said, it's quotable. So it's one of these films I was at an age where I'd watched it a lot, I could quote it, it was kind of cool, and it's one that stuck with me, and I did watch more than any of the other ones. So I had to go high, because it's one that holds a place in my sort of film history, if you like, my watching. That's one that was there, that I used to go back to, and I do really enjoy it. And like you say, it's relatable. I mean, most of his films are, sorry. But it's relatable. You were that person who just went and hung out and saw your friends and funny things happened, and I don't know, I like that about it, and I like I just think Jason Lee's really good. And
I find most of Kevin Smith's work quite an acquired taste, and you either are slightly weirdly charmed by him and go along, or you just think this is B grade comedy that I can't be bothered with, and I mean that with all the respect in the world.
Yeah.
So I like Kevin Smith, but because I'm quite accepting of most of his other films, Mallrats is just him doing that to a degree where I think it works in a weird way. He's not the best. He's not the best story. He's not the best talented director. He's done better films.
But yeah,
I just find it one of the more weirdly watchable of his comedies.
Yeah. And that moves on to number 4, and it's his first outing with Clerks. Scott and Steve gave it an 8, and perhaps it should be higher, because I held it back with a 6, 7.3. But in 4th place, just outside the top 3.
Well, I just think to take a life decision and a punt to make a completely independent film for $20,000 and shoot it in monochrome, and it's just his friends talking at a convenience store, but he still crafts. Well, the film is ridden to establish an amazing career and become a bit of a celebrity and stuff, and. You've got to, and nothing like it was remotely around until then. And then it managed to go into Sundance and be one of the prides of Miramax with like Tarantino and Soderbergh and stuff. And I mean, that's something for people chatting in a convenience store. So I think it's a weirdly landmark sort of film at the moment. And to do all that when you're nobody and you're just taking a chance with you and your friends, I think's a beautiful thing. And so I always like that. Even though none of that's to do with the film itself, it does inform a lot of watching it, which is very important. And it's also incredibly quotable and funny and interesting.
That was beautifully put. I completely agree. It is a ballsy move to go out there and release a film with your own money, your own things, do everything yourself. Look where it's got him, you know. We've got to go back to that. That's what started it all, and that's.
Well, I know if I made a film and that got me through the door, and people still talked about it and watched it, and then people judging it against my rest, put it down, I'd be like, it's my favourite, yeah. And it always will be. Yeah. Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like, because that film did everything. It did. I made that because I wanted to make that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
And then you've got all these films under you and a podcast empire and... Yeah,
and I just can't. I struggle to separate all that when I watch it because I think it bleeds through when you watch
it.
It
does, yeah. A little bit. It touches everything.
It's like a true. It's got that true indie spirit that's really exciting and vital. Yeah. Even 20 years later.
And I almost feel bad for giving it a 6, but the fact of the matter is, and I appreciate that, and I think that's. I think it's a fantastic achievement. But I sit down and I watch it and. I don't love it as much as some of his other stuff. It's again, much like Mallrats, I find it very... I can watch it, I don't hate it. I just perhaps don't enjoy it as much as the other ones, and I sometimes find it a bit of a chore to get through. And that's just my take on it. But what it is, in terms of indie cinema, it is a complete... masterpiece in that sense. It's just not my cup of tea, but it has even with that, it's forced its way up to fourth place. And in third place is his latest outing, which is Tusk, which me and you have watched. Steve gave it an 8 and I gave it a 7. It's, I think someone...
How's it up though when I have not seen it?
Because you average out the two. If you haven't seen it...
You just go on YouTube?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, so you don't include the 0?
No. Because you don't rate
catapult it downwards.
The 1.
Fair enough.
So yeah, I think it's a surprisingly good bit of work actually after hearing about it and things and wondering and having that in the back of your mind that it could go either way with him. He'd gone through a bit of a rough patch with films, with like Cop Out. He'd fallen out of love with filmmaking at that point, and then all of a sudden through a stupid idea on a podcast he came up with this actually quite dark story which bleeds through as dark. It does. It doesn't feel like I'm having a laugh with my mate on a microphone, and even though there's silly elements, that he's crafted a very eerie film. And somebody described it, and I think it was on the Attaboy Clarence podcast, as a modern day universal horror film, in the sense that it's an evil mad professor creating something. I think it's really good.
Mm.
It's really good. It lacks in a few areas. It felt a little bit stunted towards the end, I think. It kind of went with so much steam into this great kind of didn't quite know how to finish. The very ending is I like, but there's just that little bit in between getting there. But it's a strong 7, and I was thoroughly impressed.
Yeah, I mean, it's a well-crafted tale. And like you say, in a time when he'd fallen out of love with Cop Out, he'd announced Slapshot, and the ice hockey movie, and that had fallen through. Then he'd announced Clerks 3 as his final retirement, give it up, and that went by the wayside.
Was it Hit Something, wasn't it?
Hit Something, that was it. Not Slapshot. Yeah, Slapshot was the one that's actually got made. Yeah, now I'm thinking of something else. But yeah. And so, to get to that, and come back with that, a really well-told, well-filmed something in a genre, again, that he's not touched upon. It did work really well, so it's nice to hear that it's modern day Universal. I think that's a brilliant summary.
In the second place comes his third outing, and it's an 8 from Scott, a 7 from Steve, and a 7 from me. It's Chasing Amy. It's an 8 from me, an 8 from Scott, and a 7 from Steve to get 7.6. It's Chasing Amy.
I always consider his best. Because he obviously hit the scene with Clerks, Mallrats kind of failed, and it just returned to that sort of Clerks spirit of fuck, no one cares, we'll just go and make this film. And it's very, you say the premise, and you might like catch scenes out of context, and you think it might be quite ignorant regarding homosexuality and stuff. But it's actually really careful, and it just highlights that sexuality is a spectrum rather than like binary things. And it's a nice, sweet, different rom-com with still all of the things that I like about Kevin Smith in there. But it's just most weirdly effortless film, because I don't feel like he's trying when he's making it. In a lot of his films, I feel like he's trying. Or there's a moment that reminds me he's trying, if you know what I mean. Like a poop monster. I can't get over it. But I don't know, there's something about chasing. I always think it's his best. I
agree. I mean, it felt like Clerks he started, Mallrats he was working it out, and then when you go to Dogma and then Jane Silent Bob, he was getting things out of his system or he'd gone a little bit too far or something. Chasing Amy hits the pitch for me perfectly. Yeah, it's exactly, found his groove. And yeah, you watch it again, some of it looks a bit ropily filmed, some of it's a bit basic, but in the terms of storytelling, he's got it down. In terms of characters, he's got it down. And he also manages to bring in two of his comedy characters to actually deliver one of the most prolific scenes in the film, and that was clever. I think having these two cartoon-esque characters running around in the first two films to actually bring them in and show them both as a lot more human, you get a lot from their relationship, and just from that one scene, Jane Silent Bob becomes something different, but also influenced the story greatly in how it turns out. And it's a great, like, kind of swinging point in the film, isn't it? It drives that second half of the film, not even second half, I think it's about the last third, the final act through. I think you really feel for Ben Affleck and what's she called?
It used to go out,
Joey Lauren Adams.
You feel their characters, you like their characters, and then there's Brody in there as well.
Yeah.
Is he Banky or Brody?
I think he's Banky. Brody's Mallrats.
You feel this triangle of friendship more than anything. And it's misconstrued and things, and it becomes a big mess, and it's quite heartbreaking, really. But it's a great film. It's well written and really enjoyable, with some genuinely funny moments. It's a lot more grown up than some of his other work as well. And I think it's as a piece of film, it's probably his best.
Yeah,
personally,
I'd agree with that.
If I remember rightly, he went back and it's partially based on his split with Joey Lauren Adams. It hit him really hard, and I think the tone of the movie definitely shows that he'd become this more subdued sort of filmmaker, which shines through. I think a lot of his films reflect where he is in his life at that point. So it's quite
And in the number one spot, with a 9 from Steve, an 8 from me, and a 7 from Scott, it's Clerks 2. And I really love Clerks 2, hence my rating of 8. I think it's a great, fun return, and it kind of goes back to that original property and then throws in everything he's learnt since in there. Lots of people thought, we don't need this film, and you didn't need it, but it was a really funny return. And you know what, one of my favourite characters is the kid, is he called Elias or something?
Yeah.
He's such a good character, and I just think he's managed to distill he's taken those 5 films and distilled it down into something that really works. Now, for me, it's not quite as it's the greatest story is Chasing Amy, but it's got a lot of the elements that make his films work, and I really enjoy it for that.
I wanted to get an 8, but I simply couldn't, because I don't like Dante as an actor.
It was terrible.
I can put up with it in Clerks for all the reasons I said earlier, but in this, that looks better, sharper, crisper, and we're years down the line, it just sticks out like a sore thumb, and I can't handle it. And the donkey sex show goes a bit too far for me. I just don't find that funny or like relatable. Do you know what I mean? It just loses me in a weird way. So I don't understand the hilariousness of that happening and being misconstrued or being. I just think, why would that happen? That what's up with you? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not to sound whatever.
No.
But again, some of the dialogue's brilliant. I like Elliot as well, and I even like the weird Jackson 5 dance.
That's one of my favourite scenes. That's brilliant.
It annoys me a bit, but then it's great music.
I absolutely love the thing that, say it sounds like it's bad till this, but the thing that's really great is when they're in jail. Everything that happened, all those scenes towards the end, are absolutely perfect.
There's some great bits in the night, the characters coming in and affecting them, just like in the first Clerk. It's got some great scenes and things, And to bring in the extra characters and make it work, Rosario Dawson is a great love interest bit. It's Kevin Smith's wife plays the Mrs. What's-her-face. You know, that's an interesting, again, a three-way love dynamic, which he likes to play on and things. Yeah. And then you've got Randall and Elias's kind of constant warring and feuding inside and him bullying him and things, but actually they love him, really, down the line. It's a great film. I think it's just a great comfy watch. I describe it as sitting on a nice big comfy chair.
Yeah.
I say that for most Kevin Smith films. Mm. You're never going to learn more about the world or the universe, it's not going to make you ponder anything too deep, but you stick them on and you're weirdly comforted and you're weirdly charmed and you're very rarely annoyed or feel like your time is wasted, even though you've seen better films that annoyed you. It's weird, isn't it? Sorry about Kevin Smith.
So there you are, that's our Mean Geeks, our top 10 Kevin Smith movies. Is there anything you think we've missed out talking about? We should have elaborated more. Is there a reason why that shouldn't be in fourth, that shouldn't be in seventh? Let us know what you think at Weekly Geek Speak. We are Mean Geeks. A couple of weeks ago, we ran through the BAFTAs, me and Steve. Unfortunately, Scott isn't here because he's never here on the second outro.
No.
Guys?
He's not here.
Something's guys. Just manifested.
What?
He's coming through.
I've been here the whole time.
It's funny how when he starts talking, he just kind of appears.
It's getting clearer.
Have you been inventing interdimensional rift? Technology again.
Wait a second.
No, I think you were just ignoring me rudely for about an hour now. It's been.
He's gone again. Oh, he's back.
A few weeks ago, we went over the BAFTA winners. The Oscars came along. If you want to hear some great predictions of the Oscars, listen to the ABH Anywhere But Here podcast. They had a great show of that at ABH Pod. Give them a listen. They are good. But I thought we'd go over them and. Birdman pretty much swept up the biggies with Best Director. Also won Cinematographer, Best Cinematographer, and I definitely agree with that one. That definitely felt like an Oscar-y kind of film. It felt like Oscar bait watching it, personally.
I really enjoyed Birdman. I thought it was incredibly meta and enjoyable and satirical and funny. Deserves a loaded word because I've not seen every shortlisted film, and you could argue about the shortlist all day for these things. It's all incredibly subjective and arbitrary, and it depends how much stock you put into it. I don't put much stock in the Oscars at all because of reasons I mentioned. I was vaguely pleased it won just because I liked the film, but I could not care less. It doesn't change the film one iota in anyone's eyes, nor should it.
Exactly, yeah. Best Actor went to Eddie Redmayne for his depiction of Stephen Hawking in The Theory of Everything. I think he won the BAFTA, and he seems to do a good job. So,
By all reports, I've not seen the film. Mm. You always weirdly root for the ones you've seen, so I kind of wanted Benedict Cumberbatch for Imitation Game, but I've not seen to judge. I have no gripes whatsoever.
Julianne Moore won Best Actress for Still Alice.
A film I'm not even overly familiar with, if I'm being completely honest.
I believe it is about Alzheimer's. It's about a mother who gets Alzheimer's. Kristen Stewart is her daughter, and it's kind of a story of losing her mind and dealing with it in the family kind of drama-y thing. But sounds good.
What's it about?
Whiplash won quite a few. J.K. Simmons, brilliant actor.
We all love him on this show, don't we?
Very good things about that as well.
A couple of, got good...
Yeah, I've heard really good.
Sound, it got best sound, got best editing.
Which is all consistent for the sort of film I am. It all makes sense.
Supporting actress went to Patricia Arquette for Boyhood.
I thought... It's not a gimmick, but the sort of idea of filming them over a period of many years to show real-life ageing, it seemed like the sort of gimmick that might just give it an edge for the bigger awards. So I'm kind of surprised, but at least it's got something to shout about.
The good stuff Big Hero 6 got Best Animated Feature,
which I cannot believe I've not watched.
I can't believe
it. Could not be more tailored for me than if it was called Scott, come and see this fun thing for you. Six. I've not seen the first five though.
That's a problem though, isn't it?
Yeah.
And also Grand Budapest Hotel got some of the technical ones again: best makeup, best production design, best costume, you know, best set design, that kind of stuff. Definitely deserved it.
Yeah, well deserved.
It looked very pretty, it deserved those awards. And yeah, Interstellar got best visual effects, which again, stunning.
Nothing
film
competed with that this year, did it? Really?
No, let's be honest. So. Cracking. So yeah, that's your Oscars. That's all we're going to say on them.
Someone put an interesting tweet up. I wish I could remember to credit them, but they said maybe if you did the awards for films like 10 years removed, there would be more accurate gauge of what the best film of that year is. And I thought that's a very interesting point. You use the example of in 1984, Forrest Gump won, which is a great film. But reflecting, you'd think Pulp Fiction maybe should have won, wouldn't you? With how that's sort of endured. It's a very interesting point, that, isn't it? Outside the bubble and hype of it, what should be the... I'd like that. It sort of undermines the whole point of the Oscars as a self-congratulating love fest that's all about politics and campaigning.
But then it also brings it into reality. Birdman's the only one, and now it's won. I want to see it, but I rarely watch Oscar films, and it's not through, I'm avoiding them. Never appeal to me.
They become this weird genre they shouldn't be. What's an Oscar film? Do you know what I mean? I don't think Birdman's an Oscar film. It that should have been a cool independent film, but it's gotten this like lease of life and pomp and stuff, which we can argue all day whether it deserves. But it's going to be judged differently now because of it. And is that fair?
But
no.
Either way, good or bad, that's not fair, is it?
No.
Should be judged as it is.
Well, there you are. What a point. What time is it, Steve?
It's time for This Week The Geeks Have Spoken. Thank you, as always, for all your three-word reviews, tweets, interactions. Greatly appreciate them. Keep them coming in. We'll start, as always, Pete Buschbauer, the king of three-word reviews, who is on a quest for 365 films in a year after falling short.
It can't be done!
Trying last year.
It can't be done!
You say that. He's on.
He's going on an adventure!
Sorry, listeners. The rustling of the papers. He said we should guess how many movies we think he'll watch this year.
Well, I thought he would finish his task at September the 17th. So I reckon he'll get to 421.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
Alright. I went with October. I was the later one, wasn't I? I'm going to go with 385.
Well, I went August, so I'm going to go
780. Wow. But you might reach 365 and go, I'm done, guys.
I'm done. Wow.
I'm going to have a rest. I am going to play the theremin instead.
Well, he obviously he's given himself a personal goal, but he clearly likes films. So yeah. I think even when he meets the target, he's not
going to quit. He's going to keep going. Yeah.
So, I'm confident going to debate.
Yeah, very confident. So he's seen Birdman, as we were just discussing. Meta as fuck, 8 out of 10.
Almost taken from Scott's mouth.
And that was number 57.
You know what? Usually I'm on Twitter, so I kind of half know what's coming. It's kind of weird to be back to I have no idea. It's kind of fun.
You saw Foxcatcher. Corral kills it, 7 out of 10.
The fox?
Yeah.
That's me.
Yeah. I'm not against Fox. I'm against Fox.
Right,
I don't know why I did the double negative. I'm against Fox. Foxes are beautiful creatures. They should be left.
They are.
To parade our urban environments. well, it strikes me as it's all performance. The reviews I've heard for it aren't overly flattering, but no one's criticised it too harsh. It strikes me as a film I'd really enjoy, actually. But I've just not managed.
It's an Oscar film.
I thought it was going to.
I know, it wasn't, was it?
No. The Town That Dreaded Sundown, I've seen this go past on Netflix, and it was made this year, and I didn't realise either. He's put remake, sequel, something. 7 out of 10.
And what, the town?
There's this man with a weird mask and he comes back to kill people. And I IMDb'd it to see whether it was any good. And it went prequel or sequel to the... There was another one made years ago. So yeah, his review sums it up.
I don't...
Horror film. But 7 out of 10. That's pretty good. The Wicker Man, brackets 2006.
No.
More bees, please. 2 out of 10.
The bees.
Generous to give it a 2.
I know.
I haven't even seen it.
I've never watched it. And lastly, Scary Movie 5 causes suicidal thoughts. And no score. No.
Yeah.
And that was number 67, so he's well on track.
67. Not too long ago, I watched the first one again for the first time since I was like its target audience of 12. And yeah, it's not that bad.
No.
It still has the odd weird like titter. It's silly and stupid and not anything to shout about, but... I didn't think it was too bad, but they do get progressively worse, and they didn't exactly start out brilliant. So.
I remember when I was in the demographic age at school to watch Bo Selector.
Mm.
I loved it. I laughed out loud. Mm. I wet myself. It was hilarious. Then I grew up, and Keith Lemon came along, and he just stressed me out.
Mm.
I caught a bit of Keith Lemon's sketch show where he's kind of returned. But
I didn't even know he was.
No.
And then I sat there, and nostalgia kicked in for like 2 sketches, and I laughed and thought, this is funny. And then I lasted about 5 before I went, Jesus Christ.
No. No.
not my kind of thing. But I think it's a similar kind of thing, isn't it? Some comedies are just. You struggle now, and the only thing you're running off is kind of nostalgia.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I could probably watch the first 2 Scary Movies and. Remember that, but
yeah, no. I've tried.
Mm.
It's just
you probably try too much, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I don't even know why that. I try because they're not good. There's nothing to.
But then
penetrate.
You move on to Haunted House 1 and 2. You know, they're an unstoppable machine. Anyway, Man of Many Names at Sparky Wright generally defeated. Saw The Expendables, noisy, entertaining nonsense. 6.347 out of 10.
Good.
Yeah, I've not like seen it myself, but...
Right. He's working on average of all his thoughts. He rated them all. And...
Like it. Also...
you, I love how you have to validate it in your mind. You can't just accept
no,
that.
No.
Also, he's changed his name for this one. Dr. Fingerbottom at Sparky Wright.
It's one of my favourites, yeah.
I know, I like it. Tremors, goddamn graboids, 8 out of 10.
I always like Tremors. I've always loved Tremors.
I love it, but I haven't seen it for years.
A brilliant film. The sequel isn't as bad as you'd imagine. The third one just loses it completely.
The TV show, did we work this out?
We did, and I'm yet to see it. Mm. Has anyone seen it? Tweet in.
I think
was it outcasted?
Yeah,
he did. Matthew Bouch at Matt Bouch. Bad Neighbours, not so bad.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Agree.
I still like to see it.
Yeah.
But I like a bit of old Zac Efron.
Yeah.
I think it was quite good, isn't it? It's coming back, isn't it? There's a sequel.
Yeah, they are. They're making
Badder Neighbours.
No, it is.
Oh.
It's not called Badder Neighbours, but it's basically they get a worse neighbour, so they have to like bring Zac Efron back to be like, no, we'll be friends and be Badder Neighbours.
Comedy sequel.
Megalols.
Yeah.
And Bex at Arbitrary Genius. I've seen 25 films so far, but I'm not target-based.
Yeah.
So she's not sure. I linked to a film, so there's a link.
Yeah, well Steve was trying to force her to fight people, and I find that sickening, and I only can apologise.
We're trying to go on a community of friends and like-minded people, not competitors in a ill-advised game of one-upmanship.
She also said, by the death of the 2000 AD artist, Brett Ewins, she replied saying, buying Deadline from issue 1 was the first sign I was cool to me. Not been around much this week, busy at work, but I am, of course, no longer cool. But I'm good with that. And just added with another tweet, we all want a red leather Daredevil.
A red leather Daredevil. I might start. This is my chance to go viral.
Mm.
We all want.
We'll get Scott on Vine.
Can we dress you up as in a red leather?
Yes.
I'd gladly. I'm
look great.
One of the few people who liked the look of Ben Affleck's Daredevil at the time. It's Marvel. The gear's what we want eventually. Mm-hmm. I'll just have to wait. That's how I feel right now.
And at Housebroken Geek on the MASPS blog, up on the top 10 arcade games, which is a great read. If you haven't read it, check it out on our website. Housebroken Geek said, Bubble Bobble is not on his list, therefore he is wrong. And at the MASP kicked in, I'll bubble your bubble in a minute.
He responds to criticism well. I'll add Bubble Bobble.
Is that it?
That's it.
We're done.
Thank
right.
You kindly.
You heard Lucy earlier on. Make sure you enter that competition. You haven't got very long left, so you've actually probably got a day. And if you're listening to this on Monday, you missed it.
Oh, why did you miss it?
You missed it.
You can still get in touch, but you won't get a figure.
Might be some more competition soon. In fact, if you come down on Tuesday, you might win a T-shirt. You might win some pints. You might win a kiss from Steve. These are all raffle prizes.
Can I enter?
Yeah.
Okay.
How do we win the kiss from Steve?
I just get a raffle ticket.
In fact, Steve actively encourages you to just grab him and kiss him. So if you turn up...
He likes to be fondled.
Yeah, he likes it rough.
please join us again next week. Thank you very much for listening.
Yeah, cheers.
Thank you.